This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
All right, congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 96.5 The Fan. Let me tell you that Basketball Madness is coming to Kansas City for the NAIA Men's College Basketball Championship. Their title game is later today at Municipal Auditorium. 16 teams have been whittled down to two to crown a national champion. I will be down there later today. Really excited to watch a little college basketball. March fever is in the air. So this is how I want to handle the 5 o'clock hour for those of you driving home. We had Ryan LaFever on the show earlier today. I'm going to play the best of that coming up in just a bit. We're getting you ready for opening day. We'll have a show tomorrow. We will not have a show on Thursday because I will be at opening day. A lot of you will also be at opening day. Really excited that baseball is here. We're also going to have our Royals Roundtable at Hollywood Casino coming up on Friday. So we are really excited about baseball here on 96.5 The Fan. All right. I would like to do something a little bit different. A little bit of an audible, though a change up, so to speak. Rob, for the hits, I only want to do one thing. I've been in the mood for these. I've been excited for these. And we didn't get to do one earlier today, even though we led with the Royals because it was stadium related. But if we're going to play Ryan LaFever in the 5 o'clock hour, that is technically talking about Royals. And that can only mean one thing. Hit me, Rob.
We're where you want to be. Baseball with the Royals.
Molly Carrington, despite the fact the hits are a little bit different sounding today, I want you to know that they are still brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu. You thought I wasn't going to get that in, did you? You were worried about that.
I'm never worried about you, man.
All right, today's Brandon Royals lineup. Speaking of, Ryan LaFever goes back to his first year at the ball club. This is the year, I believe he said 1999 when he was on with us earlier today. Here is your Royals random lineup from that day. A 5-3 loss to Pedro Martinez in 1999. Here is your Royals lineup. Batting first in center field, Carlos Beltran.
Royals legend, future Hall of Famer.
Batting second at third base, Joe Randa.
Everybody loves Joe Randa. He was Mikel Garcia in 2004.
Batting third, the left fielder, Johnny Damon.
How did this team not win the World Series?
Batting fourth, the first baseman, Jeff King.
Who?
Batting fifth, the designated hitter, Larry Sutton.
I'm starting to figure out how this team didn't win the World Series. Larry Sutton hit fifth for this club?
He doubled that day.
Fifth?
Batting sixth, in right field, Jermaine Dye.
Jermaine Dye. Royal, another Royals legend. They just gave him away. That's when I should have known that the Royals weren't serious about baseball, when they gave Jermaine Dye away.
Batting seventh, the catcher, Chad Kruder.
Shout out to Chad.
Batting eighth.
What do you think Chad's up to right now? What occupation do you think Chad Kruder has?
Baseball coach, 100%. Mm. He played catcher, 100%.
That's a good no. I can't argue that.
Batting eighth, the shortstop, Ray Sanchez.
Ray Sanchez. Shout out to Ray Sanchez. Ray Sanchez might have actually been Mikel Garcia before Mikel Garcia. My bad, Joe Randa. That was a little disrespectful.
And batting ninth at second base, Carlos Fables.
Golly, that team. That team after three had nothing, had no punch.
By the way, the Royals lost this day with Kevin Apier on the hill. He gave up four over five and a third.
How did Pedro Martinez do against that lineup? I'm shocked he didn't pitch a perfect game.
He went six, giving up two, striking out nine.
Yeah, of course he did. That man Larry Sutton, I don't even know how he brought his bat to work that day.
By the way, this wasn't the world-beating Red Sox. Jose Offerman, Darren Lewis, Nomar Garciaparra. I mean,
that man Larry Sutton was up there doing the mannequin challenge when it was his turn to AB. That's what he was up there doing. I can't believe the Royals put that lineup up there against one of the best pitchers we've ever seen.
By the way, the Royals went 64-97 that season.
Pedro Martinez is the best pitcher I've ever seen. I mean, aside from the Madison.
Did you ever see Randy Johnson?
I don't remember it if I did.
I saw Randy Johnson and Roger Clemens. Those are the two who really stand out.
I'm not counting Madison Bumgarner because that was just that wasn't a human that I saw out there pitching against the Royals in the World Series. The best pitcher I ever saw was Pedro. He was incredible every time I got a chance to see him. Just amazing. Shout out to him. I really hope we get to see Shohei pitch this year. You think we'll get to see Shohei?
Are the Dodgers going to Kansas City this year?
Yeah.
Then yes, I hope we get to see Shohei.
Yeah, I hope we get to see him.
I hope we get to see him pitch in general. I know he was coming off injury last year.
We also get the Pirates this year, too, so we might get Skeens.
Ooh. Hope he brings his girlfriend.
You're married. That's crazy. Yo, that was out of pocket, and you know that was out of pocket here. Earlier today, we got a chance to catch up with Ryan Lefevre. I want to play it for you for the 5 o'clock audience. I told Ryan that I think this season hinges on two players. I think it hinges on Vinny Pasquantino. I also think it hinges on Seth Lugo. If the Royals are going to hit their ceiling, they need those two to play their best.
The only thing I'd add to that is it's going to take more than Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi this year. And, you know, Vinny drove in 97 runs in 5 months. So, I mean, if he can do this year what he did last year, the Royals are going to be in great shape. But it was an interesting year because if you look back on 2024, and offensively, the Royals finished sixth in the American League in runs per game. You think that's a pretty good year. But they were carried by three guys. I mean, Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi were the first trio in the major leagues to get to 60 RBIs, the first to 70, the first to 80, the first to 90, and they would have been the first to 100 had Vinny not been injured at the end of August. But when you look at the rest of the lineup, I mean, most everyone else had a down year. And so if Vinny can take it to the next level, and he made a pretty big jump last year, yeah, that'd be great. But they need Jonathan India to be what they think he's going to be. They need Mikel Garcia and Kyle Isbell to bounce back. They need MJ Melendez to bounce back. And if they do, then I don't think those three guys have to carry the team like they did last year.
How excited are you, just as somebody who has seen a lot of Royals baseball, to be in a position where they have real expectations this year? Like, one of my frustrations as a fan is I feel like progress is so ambiguous. Well, we want to see the young guys develop. Well, we can't develop and also win games at the same time. That this year, coming off of everything that they did last year, I think that fans are holding them to an expectation. Hey, we expect to be good this year. We expect to be competitive. We now know the players. We've been following the offseason moves. We just haven't had many years like that in Kansas City where we're treating the Royals like a real big league club and holding them to real big league expectations.
And I think that's fair. I think the fans should have expectations of this team. I mean, that's what the team is saying. And I love Matt Quatrero's line leading up to the season. And comparing to how you would evaluate a sports car, he said last year we went from 0 to 60, and it was the best turnaround in Major League history to lose 106 games and go to the playoffs the next year. Nobody had ever done that before. And he said, but this year we just need to figure out ways to go 60 to 65. You know, they could win 86 games again this year and win the division. They might have to win one or two more games and win the division. And that was the focus in spring training, was how do we take the next step? And the next step would be to win the division. It's a very winnable division. But if the fans have expectations, I think that's good, because the team has expectations that are right along that.
I always say in football that there's two steps that you take. You take the step from being where the Lions were to where the Lions are now. The Lions were bad for most of our childhood. They then became really good where they got to the NFC Championship game. Now it's that hard part. You got to figure out how to win one or two more games to be where Kansas City is, to be where Philadelphia is. That's where I kind of feel like the Royals are right now. It feels a lot like 2013. The Royals have proven they are a good team. Mm-hmm. Now, the difference in winning five more games, now you win 91 games, now you clear the division, now you're avoiding the wild card altogether, and now you're one of the teams that people talk about can win the division. That's kind of what the Guardians were last year, where heading into the postseason, people thought the Guardians legitimately could get hot and make a run at the World Series. That's where I feel the Royals are right now. They have taken the step to being viable, being competitive. This season, to me, is about can you win 4 to 6 more games than you did last season, and really give yourself a chance of doing something lasting.
And that's hard to do. I mean, it's because there's 29 other teams that are trying to win also. And I think when you're in your own little world, and we look at the Royals, they made a big jump. We look at the additions they made. It on paper, it looks really good for the Royals. And we don't realize it, but we're discounting the other 29 teams. Like, they didn't do anything. You know, they see the Royals the way we see the Royals. Speaking of football, I remember watching the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady made a comment, and I thought it was profound just looking back at how successful he was year after year. But he says, and he was talking about the Chiefs, and this was before the game was over. But he said, you know, you do all this work, and you get to the Super Bowl, and you either win the Super Bowl and you lose the Super Bowl, and I'm paraphrasing. But he said, but then the season's over, and you go all the way back to the beginning again. And I thought it was just a really good reminder that, yeah, when you go to the playoffs, there are expectations, your own expectations, the fans' expectations, national expectations. But the Royals are going to be 0-0 come Thursday. And so it's not like a continuation of the 2024 season. And are they going to stay healthy like they did last year for the most part? Is the starting rotation going to be the same and be healthy? Are they going to be able to hit with runners in scoring position like they did? Are they going to be as athletic as they were? Are they going to play defense like they did? We don't know, we think, but that's just all on paper right now. But the reality of it is you go back to the beginning, everyone else is also going back to the beginning, and they have their own expectations.
Right now, we're joined in studio by Ryan LaFever. Let's go back and talk about Jonathan India, one of the new additions for this team. I really like what he brings to this team. If you look at Bobby Witt, I think I saw a stat of just how many home runs he hit last year when nobody was on base and what he did when no one was on base. If now you're telling me that you can increase that with somebody who can get on base, somebody who can't steal bases the way that Jonathan India does, I think that really changes the dynamic of their lineup. How excited are you about him being added to this team?
Well, he looked great in spring training. I mean, he looked the part. I mean, he has, it's hard to describe this, but I think people will know what I'm talking about. He has very professional at-bats. He looks like a guy that when he's at the plate, the at-bat is on his terms. It's not on the pitcher's terms. There were games where he worked a walk. There were games where he swung at the first pitch and hit a home run. I think he has many ways to be able to help the Royals by getting on base of the other three. I think the bigger question going in about Jonathan India, what was he going to contribute on defense? Because I think the consensus was in Cincinnati that he was a suitable second baseman, but he wasn't really a natural second baseman, which is true because he spent most of his high school, college, and minor league career on the left side of the infield, playing third base and shortstop. But he was blocked at the big league level at those two positions when he got called up. They put him at second base. He did a suitable job, a reasonably good job. But I think the Reds people would say that he's not a natural second baseman. So where is he going to play? I think the consensus is if they use him in left field, I think they're going to be fine. But he looked really good at third base. I mean, really good, natural at third base. And so it's not just going to be what he does at the top of the order, but he's going to be a contributor on defense also.
You mentioned a couple of the X-factor players in Mikel Garcia and Kyle Isbell. How do they look in spring? How do you feel about them heading into the season?
Yeah, and those two, I think, are an extension of Jonathan India. Because if those guys are going to bat ninth, then you want those guys getting on base because they have an impact. So if they're getting on base, Jonathan India is going to have better pitches to hit. If India and Garcia or Isbell or both, depending on what the lineup looks like, I mean, that just sets up a big inning. I think Mikel learned a lot last year. Mikel hit, I think, 4 of his 7 home runs before May the 1st, which was exciting at the time. But I think now that it's all said and done, he'd probably tell you that wasn't the best thing for him. And in his mind, he kind of thought more about home runs than he should have. Watching him in spring training, he's back to hitting the ball to all fields and his strength, which is up the middle into the opposite field, and just getting on base. I mean, he was a force. When he would get on base to lead off an inning in front of the other three guys, I mean, it was almost a guaranteed run. So if he's on base, if Kyle Isbell is on base at the bottom of the order, and then also, I don't know if you're going to ask me about him or not, but I'll transition into MJ Melendez, who's made mechanical changes, which look good, and you know, take it for what it's worth because it's a spring training game. But I really hope that MJ not only worked on his mechanics, but just his thought process at the plate. Going back to Vinny, he drove in 97 runs in 5 months. And MJ drove in 44 runs. He drove in the stat that's just that I hope stands out to him more than any other is he drove in 12 runs last year without a home run. 12. You got to find more ways to drive in runs. Vinny had about the same amount of home runs and he drove in 97. So he has the ability to hit the ball out of the ballpark, but I hope MJ gets to a point where he realizes I can help the team outside of just hitting the ball out of the ballpark.
This does feel like a very critical year for MJ Melendez. Just pulling up his numbers here, he hit .206 last year with a .273 on base percentage. You mentioned the inability to drive in runs. How close do you think he is to being able to turn that corner? Because it felt like, and I understand that Bobby was the biggest prospect of the three, it feels like him, MJ Melendez, Witt, and Vinny were kind of all came in at the same time. Mm-hmm. One has ascended to stardom and is maybe the best player in the American League this side of Aaron Judge. Vinny, I think, has proven that he's a pretty consistent everyday player, and we're wondering if he can take that step to being a borderline all-star or not. And it feels like MJ has kind of lagged behind those three in terms of where he is in his development, but they're all around the same age. MJ Melendez is going to be 26 years old this year.
Physically, there are things that Bobby can do that MJ can't do. He just can't. I mean, it's just the way that Bobby was built and the way MJ was built. But there are things physically that MJ can do that Vinny can't do. But I think, and I go back to, it's an old school thought, which I think is starting to become mainstream again, is that people are realizing that the ability to drive in runs is a mindset. It is a thought process of going to the plate, recognizing the situation. Willie Wilson taught me this a long time ago when I first came to the Royals and we were on a caravan together. And Willie said, when you get into the batter's box, the game will tell you what it requires of you. And so we're starting, thank goodness, we're starting to kind of get ourselves out of an era where minor league prospects are going to the plate thinking about crushing the ball. Get a ball and crush it. And they're hoping for a home run or a 3-run double or whatever. That's great. But when you're facing Tarek Skubal and he's throwing 99 miles an hour and he's on his way to win a Cy Young Award and there's a runner at third base with less than 2 outs, you might need to just find a way to get that runner in because the chances of you crushing a ball and hitting a home run are pretty slim. And I really felt like Vinny has a feel for, yeah, I'd like to drive in 2 runs right here, but you can't drive in 2 until you drive in 1. And he did a really good job of just getting a run home, getting a run home, getting a run home. And when the season was over, he had 97. When the season was over, MJ had 44.
Right now, we're talking to Ryan LaFever in studio. I really like Mikel Garcia. Maybe it's just, you know, growing up in Kansas City, there's just always those Royals players. They weren't the star players you dislike. Mm-hmm. Rob and I were joking yesterday about Aaron Guile. I used to love Aaron Guile. He was just a do everything. I just loved him. I kind of feel that way about Mikel Garcia. I know he's not one of the star players on this team, but it feels like if the Royals are going to be able to hit their ceiling as a team, the same way that in 14 and 15, you just had so many guys that played their best baseball at the right time in their career and they intersected with each other. I kind of feel like Mikel Garcia is one of those guys that if this team is going to hit its ceiling, you do so with the best version of Mikel Garcia, whatever that ends up being.
Yeah, I'm a big Mikel Garcia guy too. For everything that he can do, he plays good defense, he can run, and now they're going to find out if he can play around the field. You know, can he play the infield and can play the outfield? His attitude is good for the most part.
Where do you think he best suits the play? Do you think he's an infielder or an outfielder?
I don't know, and I don't think the team knows yet. I mean, if people ask, well, what's the biggest question mark for the Royals? I think the biggest question mark right now is they went into spring training and they wanted Michael Massey to try the outfield. They wanted Jonathan India to try the outfield. They wanted Michael Garcia to try the outfield. And in Arizona, there were a few games where, I mean, if you're going to be tested, you want to be tested in Arizona because it's very difficult to play the outfield there because of the sun and whatever. So that was the question. We're like, how is all that going to shake out? How are you going to find playing time for guys? Because you can make a lineup that has the right guys in there, but can they get the job done defensively, especially at Kauffman Stadium? I mean, you have to be able to cover some ground. But with Michael, and I'd forgotten this, Michael had a down year. No way around it. He finished the season. I'd forgotten this. He finished the season 0 for his last 17. The playoffs began, and I think he went like 7 for 22 with stolen bases. His on-base percentage was .348. So there was a feeling that when the situation called for a little more, whether it meant the game was on the line or maybe they're at Yankee Stadium or whatever, that he could rise to the challenge. It's getting him what the good major leaguers do. You have that mentality, whether you're playing the Yankees at home or the Dodgers at home in front of a sellout crowd, or you're in Sacramento at the end of the year, or you're George Steinbrenner Field playing the Rays in the middle of the summer, that every single game, every single at-bat means something. And I think that was the message to him. But everything physically is there. The way he started out last year, I thought we're going to see Bobby Witt Jr. and Michael Garcia right next to each other on defense and right next to each other in the lineup for the next 10 years, but he has to earn his way back.
Let's talk about the rotation. I thought what really helped this team last year and what they were sort of unable to avoid in some of the past years is their rotation just never allowed them to get into a tailspin. Mm-hmm. You've seen this with the Royals where they have a decent April and then in May they hit a little bit of a tailspin and their pitching just bad start after bad start. And next thing you know, you were 15-15. You now look up and you are now 16-27. And it feels like you are out of it. Their rotation kept them in it even when the offense wasn't playing at a high level. I really like their rotation. If you're telling me that 1-4, they got Reagans, Lugo, Michael Wacha, Michael Lorenzen, and you throw in Chris Bubich, you got a chance to win just about every game that you start.
Yeah, it's got a chance to be every bit as good, maybe even better than it was last year. Denny said this going back to our first years together, and I was always raised with the importance of a good starting rotation on a winning team. I mean, every team wants to have a good starting rotation, but winning teams need to have a good starting rotation. But the way Denny broke it down made sense, that if your starting rotation is strong, it takes the pressure off of everybody else. The bullpen isn't pitching 5 or 6 innings every single day because the starter is only going 4 or 5 innings. Your offense comes... Hud says this all the time during the telecast, that he remembers days going to the ballpark when their best starter was on the mound. And there was a feeling that we're going to win this game even before the game even starts. And maybe even more importantly, we just need to score 3 or 4 runs and we're going to win this game. So it takes pressure off of the offense as well, because you and I have lived through a lot of seasons here where, you know, guys get out of their car in the parking lot and they got to figure out how they're going to score 7 runs tonight, you know, to have a chance. And even the best offenses just can't do that night in and night out. So it takes the pressure off the bullpen. It takes the pressure off of the offense. And you usually get really good defense when your starting pitcher is throwing strikes and everybody's alert. It's no surprise that when you usually have a bad pitching team, you usually have a bad defensive team too, because you're putting guys to sleep. There aren't the degree of urgent moments aren't there where the defense is alert all of the time. And so if you can begin with a good starting rotation, everything else seems to fall into place. And the Royals had a great one last year. I mean, they had the second best starting ERA in the major leagues last year.
Let's go to the bullpen. Let's say that on Thursday it is 3-2 heading into the seventh inning. They got a quality start. It's 3-2. How do they handle the seventh? How do they handle the eighth? Who comes in as their closer on Thursday?
I don't know, but it's going to be some combination of Carlos Estevez and Lucas Ursig. Now, that's the season plan. Specifically on Thursday, I don't know. Estevez is still coming back from missing spring training because of a sore back. I was there on Friday was the last time that I was in spring training before I came home. And his velocity was up, but it wasn't quite to what he's accustomed to. So that was the plan, at least coming into the season. But unless something happens in the last week and that velocity gets up to where he's used to, if Lucas Ursig didn't prove he could handle the big moments last year, I don't know what anyone was seeing. Because, I mean, here's a guy that never really was a full-time closer before, and he was in the biggest moments in the Baltimore and the New York series in the postseason. So he's the closer of the future. I think there's no doubt about that. But it's nice to have an alternative. Lucas Ursig is a wonderful human being. He's an unselfish teammate, and he's okay with sharing that closing role with Estevez.
That was Ryan Lefebvre, who joined us earlier today on the show. If you missed any part of that, he was on for 45 minutes earlier today. I would highly encourage you to go check it out on the podcast page. He is one of the voices of the Kansas City Royals. Keep it right here. You're listening to The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show Early Wedge on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you. Rob is here as well. Earlier today, Trey Smith was on with Kay Adams on her show, and Trey Smith says that he wants to stay in Kansas City long term.
Really cool to see T getting paid. You know, ultimately, man, I can only focus on just working out and training, you know, and I love Kansas City. It's my home. I love the Chiefs. The fans in Kansas City are some of the best people I've ever been around. And, you know, ultimately, I would love to stay there. That's my plan.
So that was Trey Smith earlier today. He says that he wants to stay in Kansas City. Certainly would hope that's the case. He's under contract for 1 year, $23.4 million, and you won multiple Super Bowls. So working for the Chiefs has certainly been in your best interest. I was listening to the midday show earlier, and they had this topic. Is the offseason a failure if the Chiefs don't reach a long-term extension with Trey Smith? I don't think it's a failure, and this is why. Let's say that the Chiefs don't reach a long-term extension with Trey Smith and let him walk at the end of this upcoming season. So he is a free agent in March of 2026. That will mean that they will have signed him to a five-year contract that paid him less than $30 million. For the player that you have in Trey Smith, who has been healthy, who has been one of the better offensive linemen in the National Football League, everybody would have lived with if I told you 5 years ago that that's what they had signed Trey Smith. Look at what you paid. Look at the production you got. That's still a very good contract. I would say it then frees you up in 2026 to, in my opinion, realign your salary cap with positional value. One of the issues that I have with the Chiefs, and I don't have many with how they've built their team, given what they've been able to accomplish on the field, is I don't think it's indicative of positional value. They gave Nick Bolton $30 million. He plays middle linebacker. He's had one great season as a pro. They just locked themselves into $23 million to their right guard, not their left tackle, not their center, not their right tackle. They committed $23.4 million to their right guard. That's just not the positional value that I would have. And I would say that I think people in the media and fans confuse this all the time. the benefit that you get from walking on Trey Smith potentially at the end of this upcoming season is it's a clean break. There's no cap tied into the future of Trey Smith. This is a one-year wham, bam, thank you, ma'am kind of move. That's not the worst thing that could happen, where you could take the $23 million that you have committed to Trey Smith that now comes off the books. You now get $23 million and you can give that money to Trent McDuffie. You can give that money to a D-end. You can give that money to a player that plays at a position that has a greater value on the field. I don't think it's a negative if the Chiefs don't sign Trey Smith. Yes. It creates more cap space for 2025 if you come to an agreement. What do they need the cap space for this year? They have enough cap space to sign their rookies. They have enough cap space where if a maneuver needs to happen in October, like happened last year, then you have the flexibility to be able to do it. The Chiefs don't need to create much cap space for this season. The roster's done. They're not adding anybody else. Not of significance. The Chiefs are not adding another starter in free agency. They might add more depth through free agency. Sure, there might be another Mike Pinnell move out there. There might be another Juju Smith-Schuster kind of move. The Chiefs are done taking their big swings at the pinata. So I don't really see the urgency in creating cap space for the 2025 season when you can't absorb this one contract. The Chiefs could be in a position. Let's say the Chiefs don't actually negotiate with Trey Smith. And let's say they are happy with him to play under the franchise tag, and their plan is to have him play for this upcoming season and move on. The Chiefs could clear almost $50 million in cap space without doing a single move other than letting Jawan Taylor go and letting Trey Smith go play for another team. $50 million in cap space. That's before any other move that happens with the Kansas City Chiefs. That's before Travis Kelce makes a decision. That's before a restructure with Patrick Mahomes. The Chiefs could be in a position where they could have $80, $90 million going into the 2026 offseason. That's not a bad position to be in for a team that might need a right tackle, a team that might need a pass rusher, that might need a lot of things. I don't think that delaying the Trey Smith decision, or maybe not making a Trey Smith decision, I don't think that's the worst thing that they can do. I would not consider it a failure if they don't reach a long-term extension with their right guard.
So I don't know how I'd use the term failure. I think failure is a bit dramatic. But I think it's, if this is a grading scale, it's a D plus if they can't get Trey Smith done. Carrington, we know how the Chiefs operate. They always make one big move every offseason, one big swing. Jawan Taylor, Tyrann Mathieu. Like, we can name the times they've taken a big swing in free agency. Do the Chiefs' big swing was this year in free agency? It was Trey Smith. They have dedicated more money to Trey Smith this offseason than they did anyone else in their moves. Not their left tackle, not their middle linebacker. The biggest swing the Chiefs made this offseason was Trey Smith. Same way their big swing that one offseason was Orlando Brown Jr. And Orlando Brown Jr., I mean, I said at the time, if you can't get him locked up, this big swing comes the big caveat and it could look like a miss. That's kind of how I feel about Trey Smith. This was their big swing move. I know no one views it that way because he was a Chief last year, but $23.4 million for a right guard is a big swing move.
I agree.
He was one of two players that got tagged, and he's currently the only player in the NFL on the tag. This is their big swing move. And if you can't get this done to get him extended, and you have another 3 months, then your big swing move is met with a miss because your other moves, at least on the offense, were all predicated on the idea of we're going to have Trey Smith and we're going to lock him up. They would, I bet if they were going to walk on Trey Smith, which we talked about at the beginning of offseason, they would have kept Joe Tooney. They wouldn't have traded him. They probably aren't signing Jalen Moore if they, you know, are making different decisions. I think their entire offseason predicated on Trey Smith. And if your offseason hinges on that move and you can't get him locked up long term and you now have to take another big swing next offseason, I think that's a miss. I view it the same way with Orlando Brown Jr., which, if you'll remember, I liked the player. I was worried about the contract, and that came to fruition.
Let me disagree with you here. And maybe it's not even a disagreement. It's just looking at it a little bit differently. What if the Chiefs didn't want to take a big swing this year? And what if the Chiefs' plan was, hey, for the 2025 offseason, we are preaching continuity for this season. We're preaching continuity. They did not turn over their roster. next year they could be forced to turn over their roster. Like, just think about the players that we know are on one-year contracts. Travis Kelce is on a one-year contract for next season. Hollywood Brown is on a one-year contract for next season. Juju Smith-Schuster is on a one-year deal. Charles Aminihu is on a one-year deal. We can go up and down the list of the players. Juwan Taylor is on a one-year deal. This year, they weren't really looking to add a lot of starters to their team. They added a lot of depth on their team, but they have not added a lot of starting caliber players. What if their plan is, all right, for 2025, let's keep our team intact for this season? Because we know at the end of this upcoming season, the era is going to be over, so to speak. We're going to be forced to turn over our roster, where they're going to have, heading into the 2026 season, so now looking ahead to not this upcoming August, but next August, we're going to have seven potential new starters. Hey, we're not going to be able to fill all of those things through the draft. We're going to have to fill a handful of them through free agency. So let's give ourselves the cap space and the flexibility to be able to do it. With just three moves on this team, if you and I look at it. So I just gave you the numbers. Trey Smith is at $23 million. The Chiefs will save $20 million by just Juwan Taylor. And then if Travis Kelce simply retires at the end of this upcoming season. So Kelce just decides, hey, I'm done. I said I was going to play by 2 years. I'm out at the end of this. We're talking about a pretty substantial amount of money that you have saved with just those three guys. Kelce's cap hit is 19.8, and I already gave you the cap hit for those other two. We're talking about the Chiefs could be significant players in free agency next season if they are willing to make a couple of moves with some guys and move on. So what if we have played this thing where the Chiefs are not looking at it in a one-year vacuum? The Chiefs are potentially looking at it in a two-year vacuum. Let's keep continuity for the 2025 season. Let's try to run it back one more time. And then heading into 2026, this is really a two-year plan, and we are determining who we think is the foundation of that two-year plan. I think that could potentially be a way to look at the way that they're building their roster. The ratings for March Madness were through the roof. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's Lucas Ersig from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with CDOT on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
The ratings are out for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament. And let me tell you, the people were interested. Viewership through the second round across Turner Sports averaged 9.4 million viewers. This is the most watched tournament in 32 years. The games on Sunday, led by Kentucky and Illinois, and also Duke and Baylor, averaged 10.1 million viewers. That is up 13%. In the NCAA tournament. Now, I do think we're starting to get a little fun with endpoints and numbers when it comes to the ratings, but what does it matter? I don't care. What I do think that the ratings of March Madness show is, I think America is very much into sporting events and not games. March Madness is a sporting event. It is something that people look forward to on their calendar. So it doesn't matter if you don't follow college basketball season in November or December or January. I mean, the ratings would show that people are not super interested in college basketball during that time. That it is something in our brain that turns on when March gets here. Oh, the tournament is on. Let me watch it. I want to fill out a bracket. I want to bet on the games. I want to keep up with it. I want to watch it. It is a community event. Rob, think about at our own office here. We got a television that we play the game on sometimes, etc. We brought the TV up here. How many people were huddled around watching the NCAA tournament? Do you think any of those people could tell you who was on Baylor, who was on Mississippi State? No, it's the tournament. This is what we do at this time of year. I think America is still very much into events. We talk about the death of horse racing, for example. Well, the Kentucky Derby is an event. People will watch it. People will watch the Belmont. People will watch the Preakness. Boxing. Yes, people don't watch boxing on a fight-by-fight basis, but if you create an event like Jake Paul fighting Mike Tyson, people are going to watch events.
The Drive.
We got breaking news.
First to breaking news
this
in
is.
Kansas City.
We got some NFL quarterback breaking news, Carrington.
Aaron Rodgers?
The other veteran quarterback who's available now has a destination. Russell Wilson is now a New York Giant. He signed a one-year contract worth up to $21 million, which includes 10.5 guaranteed. So if you're Aaron Rodgers, cross New York Giants off your list because they just signed Russell Wilson. And according to Jonathan Jones, they are actually not at all in the running for Aaron Rodgers anymore.
Yeah, so, I mean, this eliminates you from that. This is the question, though. Does this eliminate the Giants from getting Shadur? You'd have to think that this eliminates the Giants from Shadur, right?
Ooh, 1 year. It's a 1 year deal.
But I'm just if you're gonna redshirt
Shadur, which I know you've talked about as an option.
But why would you go get Russell and go get Jameis Winston if your plan was to go draft a quarterback? Like, I don't understand why you would do that if that's your plan. If you really like Shadur, great. That's perfectly fine. You have the fourth overall pick. Go get him then. Go get him, start Jameis Winston, start Russell Wilson, and then when it falls apart the way we all know it's going to fall apart, then start your young guy. But this move, especially a one-year deal up to $21 million and $10.5 million guaranteed, and you just went to go get Jameis Winston, tells me that the Giants don't like this quarterback class, and they're prepared to try again next year. You got to be willing to try. If you're only committed for $10 million for Russell Wilson, you ain't committed to Russell past this season. I don't care how many years it is. You're not committed. So, yeah, I would say that this eliminates the Giants for Shadur.
I'm just saying, are we sure? I mean, restart next year. Why don't we restart with new GM, new coach?
No, 100%. I'm with you. I don't think that's why I think they're playing it the way that they're playing it. Interesting breaking news. Let's talk about this more tomorrow. Let's put a pin in this and we'll come back and we'll talk about the Giants and their quarterback decision. I had a lot of fun today. Hopefully you guys did as well. We'll be back tomorrow as we are, a day and a half away from opening day. Really excited that baseball season is back in Kansas City. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.